Hello, folks. How you doing? It's Danny Tisdale. Hello to all of you out there. You know, thanks for tuning in. I'm your host and I'm publisher and founder of Harlem World Magazine. On today's show, as we love to do, we speak to one of Harlem's leaders, legends, and trailblazers, helping our readers live their best life and style. But before we get started, don't forget to get more Harlem content and tips and tricks by following us on all the platforms that are out there, Apple, iHeart, Alexa, and tons more. And don't forget to sign up also for the HWM Insider e-letter that you can click on right below. We have a great guest. You can probably tell we have great guests because here I am rushing through the intro. I can't wait to speak to her, Leah Hawkins, Harlem's Leah Hawkins, resident and super soprano sensation, has claimed this year's Kennedy Center Marian Anderson Vocal Award. Yes. With a career that commenced at age 9. I didn't stutter. 9 years of age, Leah has performed over 25 operatic roles, including 5 premieres. Beyond her musical achievement, she's actively involved in organizations like Time in Kids, you know, we need that, advocating for equality, you know, we need that too, and serves as a mentor through Utopia Arts, nurturing BIPOC classical artists. Leah's next mission, to teach and mentor at the Harlem School of Arts, shaping the next generation of talents. Leah Hawkins, thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I do want to clarify that I have not yet set up anything with the Harlem School for the Arts, but that is one of my goals in the coming months and years.
Well, HSA, I hope you're listening, and future candidate. So hit her up afterwards. you've done so much, and I am so glad that you are on the show. I know we had a few hiccups along the way, but I'm so glad to have a fellow artist on the show. And I do want to say that, you know, with the work that you're doing, I know that you will make a huge impact on the kids that you are working with and those that you will work with. But I want to get right into it. In the opening, you know, I read about you wanting to make impact on kids. Mm-hmm. Who's made the largest impact in your life for you to become who you are today?
Most certainly my parents. I've never had a job outside of singing. They have been supportive from the very beginning. When I said I wanted to be a singer at 4 years old, really before wow. then, there are videos of me at 2 years old and really like 14 months old, 16 months old, singing into a microphone. So I've always known this is what I wanted to do. But when I verbally expressed it at 4 years old, they were behind me from the start and took my first piano lesson at 8 or 9 years old is when I started lessons, first voice lesson at 12. So I've always had them behind me, pushing me to really go toward my dreams. They've never tried to take me off track.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I already know what the answer is, but I imagine that support went a long way in your success.
Oh, absolutely. I could not do what I'm doing if they had not given me that support.
That support, yeah. But how did it work out, Leah, that you started so young? I mean, was it you had other family members that were doing it also, or it's just the way that it has played out?
Sort of how it just played out. So my mother's mother, who I never met, she died very young. She was known as a family songbird. And so she sang. And then she has a brother who is a concert pianist and has a doctorate in piano. And he's a musician. But he was never very supportive of me, I'm honest. And so I didn't have that as sort of my go-to. So people that I could go to. She wasn't here and he wasn't so supportive. But my parents loved music and they loved that I loved music. And so they wanted me to pursue it. It was as simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. But it sounds pretty complex, and it sounds at the same time that you've had to, you know, really be focused single-mindedly to do what you're doing, because but that's the story we love, isn't it? That the odds are against you in some ways, and you know, and no matter what, she, you know, still does what she does, and does it, yeah, you know, so well, you know.
Yeah. People do love that, and that is not my story. It isn't my story.
Most definitely. And adding more to the story, what was life like and career like during COVID? Even though I think I know that answer too, but what was life like during COVID? Work, no work, a little bit here, a little bit there?
So it was, I want to say complicated. So, of course, my industry shut down,
right,
just stopped altogether. But I was, when COVID started, I was a young artist or a resident young artist at the Metropolitan Opera. So I was still getting paid. We get paid throughout the year, whether we work or not. And so I had that going for me. And then I had won some awards along the way. And a lot of these organizations would just email us and say, it's a hard time for you, let me send you some money.
Wow.
So the entire time I'm during COVID, I'm making money. And then on top of that, I went back to Philadelphia with my family for about 3 months because I gave up my apartment for a while. Because I said, I have no work, so I should probably get out of this apartment.
Right.
And this company that I was working with in Munich, Germany, they were like, hello, we want to start our season again in August. Can you come back in August and do this show? Because I was in Germany when COVID started. Like when everything shut down, I was already in Germany, came back home. And they said, well, can you come back and start our season again in August? I did. And while I was there, I said, you know what? All my gigs in the U.S. are canceled, but I had gigs in Europe.
This was August of last year.
2020. Sorry.
2020. Okay.
Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
COVID time. And I go back to Germany, and while I'm there, all my gigs in the U.S. in 2020 canceled for the fall. So I asked the company, I said, hey, can you guys help me get a visa so I can just stay in Germany? Because in the spring, I have gigs here. And they said,
and Germany's not that bad.
it's not terrible. And they did. They helped me find a visa. They made me a member of the company, gave me health insurance, and I had a visa to stay in Germany for 7 months of the pandemic.
That's fantastic. During a terrible time, it's glad to hear that, you know, it played out that way.
It made me realize how blessed I've been. And then also kept me from complaining too much, because it could have been much worse.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Leah, what is the secret to your success? You know, it sounds like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, mm-hmm. hard work. Well, that's always the super plus. But what is it? It just seems like the path is already created and you're just, you know, walking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does it feel to you as you live it, as you're living it?
Oh, that's a really great question. I suppose it feels like I am just the vessel, and I'm allowing myself to just be led to where I'm supposed to go. And I honestly, I feel like God, the universe, whatever people want to say, I feel like God gave me the parents and gave me the family and gave me the people in my life to help
no
me
accidents.
Go down this path.
No this is accidents. Not an accident.
Right. No, I don't believe that at all. No way. I didn't do this on my own. You know, I sort of hate when people say that. I did it all on my own. No, you didn't. We don't do anything on our own.
Nobody. No. Come on.
No.
I mean, how could you even think that? You know, it's like, you know, we live in a world family, you know.
Exactly. We need
each other. And there's no accidents.
Absolutely.
At least that's what I believe, you know.
I believe it too. So I suppose it's allowing myself and submitting to the idea of me being a vessel. I've really been trying to focus on that in the last 3 years, especially because of how COVID happened for me. I said, I need to just give myself over, because clearly my way is not gonna make things work. Our way isn't going to work, if you know what I mean. So.
Yeah, and a lot of times too, you know, we, you know, have these plans, we get a consultant, you know, we look at what others have done in the past. And yeah, that's great. And you do want to do that. But sometimes, you know, it just plays out the way it plays out, you know, anyway. Yeah. It sounds like in some ways, obviously, we don't know each other, but I can see that, you know, you are approaching it that way because there's a smile on your face. You know, you don't have any lines, you know, stress lines, as I've heard them called. So what do you say to young talent that hears you and see that you're what? You're probably 18. And, you know, what do they say when they say, oh, you know, Leah Hawkins, I want to follow in your footsteps. You know, you started with your baby shoes at two. You know, how do I do that? If someone, when a young kid asks you that, because you want to work with kids.
Yeah.
And I know they're going to ask that because, of course, they ask questions.
Yeah.
But how do you parse that?
There's so many things I'd like to say. But I suppose the first is you have to believe in yourself to the point that you feel crazy in believing yourself so much. You know?
And that nobody can deter you from that.
No one. Not a soul. And of course you need people around you who can do that, but it has to come from within first.
Yeah.
So when I was in high school, even before then, I was in high school, and in my high school yearbook, what about, you know how we all write like a goodbye letter kind of
thing,
in the printed yearbook. And I said, at the end of my little goodbye, I said, see y'all at the Met.
Ooh.
And I wrote that at 17 years old or 16 years old when I wrote that. And I believed with everything in me that I was going to sing at the Met. No one could tell me differently. I went around telling all my friends. I told their parents. People still remind me that I said this. I sort of forgot that I said it, because I believed it, so it was so real for me, you know? I felt like I was living it. And
you can't beat that. You can't beat, you know, that kind of, you know, it's the confidence where you don't blink. You know, it's just, I know that to be true.
Yes. And kids have these things within, a knowing that they have. And I want kids, anybody who's behind me or, you know, with me, because I don't want to say behind me, but with me, to believe with everything they have, and to listen to that voice within them that says, this is right for me. This is what I should do. I know that I'm going to do X, Y, Z, because that's not placed in you for no reason.
That's right.
It's real.
That's right.
It's very real.
And if you don't pay attention to it,
you regret it. People who don't pay attention to it are like, it's always a what if. You always live with the, well, what if?
Why didn't I?
Why didn't I? You don't have to live with that if you just follow that thing within you, that knowing that you, that you're born with, you know? Yeah.
That's great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what makes great people, you know, mm-hmm. that they pay attention to that, because whether it's, you know, football, whether it's racing, you know, that you have to have that confidence. I don't know people who've excelled that they don't have the confidence and they make it to the top, you know?
And the thing is, the confidence is going to waver. You're going to get tested. Yeah.
It sharpens the tools, right?
Absolutely. Last month, I was in this space like, was this a mistake? Did they mean to do this? Did they mean to give it to me? You know, I was there, but that's only for a short period that I'm there, because I could come back to what I already know to be true, you know?
You know, I'm always interested in the process, you know? So what do you do in that moment, you know, where you have that moment where you know, your confidence, you know, kind of laxes? And Leah, can you hold that thought of your question your answer for a second? Because I just want to give our readers a station ID and let them know that they're listening to the Harlem World Magazine show with me, your host, Danny Tisdale. Don't forget to subscribe and to become an insider and support us by hitting the contribute tab at the bottom. Yes, folks, it's about that green stuff every now and then. But yeah, what do you do in those moments where, you know, the confidence just isn't there for that moment? Yeah.
That moment, I try to either write it out or cry it out.
Oh.
And then my aunt is a professor of psychology, or I forget exactly what her title is. She's not my favorite. She's my auntie. But I do call her because sometimes I just need someone to say, you're okay. This is what this is. She's also a woman of faith. So I have that side of it as well.
Oh, and you got the really team. Like, you got the dream team. I mean, what do you, no wonder.
So she is my, like, she's my rock when it comes to like getting my mind back to where I need to be. And also my friends, you know, I have a lot of friends who are in the industry who I can really go to and vent to, and we can discuss, and we're all usually feeling the same way at some point. So we need each other.
Humans. Like, we're humans.
We're humans. Yes. That's it.
We're sensitive to the world. You know, I like to think, of course, you know, I'm hard as a rock and, you know, I can walk around. But that, it's wishful thinking. You know, we're all sensitive to, you know, whatever happens out there and kind of rubs us the wrong way, you know. So with that, Leah, I guess this might be more of another process kind of question. You know, you need moments to get away to, you know, kind of clear your head. Is there any, I know it's a tricky question because, you know, it's your private space. And as I ask you, you know, how do you kind of escape in Harlem? You know, you go to a park or what? I don't want anybody going to the park you go to. Oh, there she is over there. Let me, you know, I want to sing with her. I don't want that kind of moment. But how do you kind of escape and, you know, clear your head and reset yourself when you're in Harlem? Do you have a space like that? Is there a favorite place in Harlem?
There are two places. My apartment is my little oasis in Harlem. I have a balcony, and I just go sit on the balcony.
Oh, yeah.
And just breathe for a little bit, hear the city sounds, and watch people go by.
Oh, I love balconies. I love balconies.
Me too. I wasn't even looking for one, but I'm so glad I got it.
Everything's going your way.
Oh, no, please. outside of that, I'm not going to say where it is, but there is a club bar in Harlem that I should go to and dance away anything I'm feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, especially that dancing. And I do want to say that if you're ready anytime to do a duo, when I'm in the shower, I have an excellent voice. You know, so I'm just letting you know, you don't even have to respond because, you know, I'm just saying, you know, if you ever have that moment, I think you can probably tell by my microphone voice, you know, I don't want to, you know, do anything.
There's a gift in there. I hear it.
You hear it somewhere deep inside. Hopefully, I'm just kidding. But I want to get back into the real work you're doing. And this fall, you perform Anthony Davis's X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X, which premieres at the Met, making it the second opera by a Black composer in Met's histories. You're performing dual roles as, I think, Louise and as Malcolm's wife, Betty Shabazz. Yes. How do you prepare for a performance like that? And what else can you tell us about that? Any behind the scenes goings on?
Well, we haven't started rehearsals yet. We start in...
Oh, you haven't started?
Not just yet. Probably about 2 weeks. We start rehearsals two and a half weeks.
And when does it hit the stage?
November 3rd it opens. So it runs from November 3rd to December 2nd.
So there's about two and a half months on the stage prepping and getting ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, this is my third time portraying real life people on stage. And it's really a gift. It's a gift because Louise Little was Malcolm's mother.
Yeah.
I don't have videos of Louise Little, but I have, you know, writings about her, which is helpful. And then with Betty Shabazz, there are videos of her. So I can go and see her mannerisms. I can see the way she spoke. I look at pictures of her and I'm like, I look kind of similar to her. It's been very interesting to because as singers, we think of these people as characters, and I get to think of them as real life people because they are, because they were.
Right.
And it's very exciting to do that. Now, this music is some of the most difficult I have ever encountered.
Why is that?
It's 20th century music, which tends to be more avant-garde and atonal and rhythmically challenging. So it's very difficult music, but it tells the story quite well. You can hear in the first scene when she's reliving the horsemen, the clansmen around the house, their house in Omaha. You can hear that in the music. And so I want people to really listen for that.
I hear you.
Score.
Maybe it's just not understanding music on stage, but I would think that it would be easier doing, you know, contemporary opera. Is that the right term for it? You know, as opposed to, you know, the traditional opera where, you know, the people are not alive. I would think it's just the opposite.
No, it's funny.
And why?
Because in our training, we learned, musically speaking, we learn those melodies and those harmonies.
Oh, I see.
That's how we are trained. Whereas with new music, we learn that as well, but not as extensively as what we learn about the more traditional operatic styles. And so rhythmically speaking, a lot of the pieces from an earlier time are not so difficult. They're not as, they're not as complicated as they are now, because the styles have changed and they've evolved over time.
Wow.
So the one thing that I love and that most singers love is that with the older pieces, you're often compared to singers of old and artists of old. Oh, it's not the way XYZ did it. It's not the recording that I heard. I prefer XYZ. Whereas with new music, most people don't have a reference to compare it to. And so they're going, oh, well, I just like this because I like it. You know, it's not being compared to something, which is a nice change.
Yeah, it's just you know, I love the art so much, and it's just amazing how different and similar it is for artists in their field.
Yeah.
Can you give the dates again for those performances? Because I know you said in November, but if someone didn't have their calendar when you mentioned those dates, I think I can talk a little bit longer so that they can get their book and put it in their phone if they want to do that. So that they can make sure not to miss the performance. It sounds pretty amazing, quite frankly.
I think it will be. And the production is supposed to be Afro-futurist in style, which is very interesting take.
Can you what does that mean?
Afro-futurism. This idea of blackness in the future.
I thought it was going to be something, you know.
Well, you know, like on stage, there is, when I went to go see the production, it's the same production from Detroit. There was like a spacecraft at the top of the stage to sort of.
Very futuristic. Okay.
And very futuristic in that way. Yes. But the performance dates are November 3rd through December 2nd. They're all different times throughout that month. There are 7 performances.
November 3rd. Through December 2nd.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
At the Met.
So go to metopera.org. Look for X, the Life and Times of Malcolm X, and you'll get the dates and you'll see the cast and everything.
And this is not like Harlem Week. I can't go to the event, just shout out when I'm in the audience. There's me.
Well, here's the thing. Girl. Actually, uh-oh. We want that as artists at the opera. We don't want
because that's not opera-ish, right? That's not.
Well, that's what we're told. It's not operatic, but that's exactly what most of us artists are fighting against. This idea that opera has to be stuffy or elitist. No, art is for everyone. Everyone deserves art. I don't care where you're from. I don't care your background. I don't care any of that. So when people come to the opera, I want them to cheer. I want them to yell. I want them to stand. I want them to be a part of the experience. That's why we love Beyonce concerts. That's why we love, rock and hip hop concerts. That's right. Because that's people are involved.
Get up, do your thing, be yourself. Right.
Now, bring that. Get up. Right. Don't get up at the Met, y'all, in the middle of the show.
Gradually make that change, over time and step by step, not just all in one fell swoop.
You can get up at the end when you clap, but in between, don't block.
So before I forget, and it looks like we have 3 minutes and change.
Okay.
And it seemed like we just got on the podcast, but I wanted to ask you the arts, Hollywood. Mm-hmm. In the street, unions. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about what's going on? If I know political and politics sometimes doesn't merge, so I can understand if you don't want to comment. But is there, as an artist, any response? You said you don't want to comment.
It's not that I don't want to comment. It's that I've been sort of. I would say I'm blocking it, but sort of staying out of it in a way. Do you know what I mean? Because we've had our own issues within the operatic industry, and I sort of don't want to take on anyone else's.
And I'm not trying to get you in issues. Trouble. Yeah. I'm not trying to get anybody. I'm just asking questions. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Okay. I hear you, and it is what it is, and we all have to do better. This is me speaking, Danny Tisdale.
It's the noise in the industry that I try to block out, because I'm here for the art. I'm here for the music making. I'm here for the connecting with humans. All that other stuff is taking away from the art.
I'm curious. When you're on stage, what's the moment? Do you have like a favorite moment, when you're on stage? Is it an octave that you hit? Is it when you're, your hand is up and you're looking up and you see, light hitting you a certain way? What is your favorite moment that, you say to yourself when you're on the stage, oh, this is why I'm here? Or is it when people are standing up clapping?
No. Mm-mm. That's great too, but no, it's when I am in the middle of singing a phrase and the phrase, it gets quiet or I stop singing and it's not yet time to clap, but the audience is just
That moment.
It's silent. It's that moment of silence.
You can hear a pin drop.
Feel. That's what I love. And then you finish a piece and you can hear people sigh. It's the most beautiful moment.
Ooh, that just gave me the chills. That was like, because that's pretty powerful, I can imagine. I don't know how many people can be seated at the Met, but that must be pretty powerful.
4,000.
Okay. I'm sorry. I can't even let you respond because we've got seconds left. How can people stay in contact with you, Ms. Hawkins, your email or Instagram, just so that they can be around you?
Yeah. My Instagram is my name, Leah Hawkins _ Facebook, Leah Hawkins Soprano, and my website, LeahHawkinsSoprano.com.
Fantastic. Love you, Leah. Fantastic. I'm so glad that we had a chance to have this conversation. And I may be in the audience. You want to call me on stage? You can. I will do that, duo with you. No, I'm just kidding. Love having you on the show, and the best of luck to you, you in life and in career. The best.
Thank you for having me. Such a gift. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us,
listening to the Harlem World Magazine show. Share us, like us. Don't forget to hit us up and subscribe below. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.